Well, as we well know, this year we started out with a new pumpkin that Danny with Deep South Homestead sent us, to Cherokee Tan. Mm-hmm. And man, these things have grown.
Got some pumpkins.
My vines are dying back. I got a good crop, a real good crop. I'm excited about it. Now, these things turned out to be a little smaller than I expected, but the disease package and the disease resistance on these was absolutely stunning.
We was a little bit worried for a while because we was worried we had growed all vine and their pumpkin, because the vines was almost head high and took up the whole hoop house and more.
Yep.
But it's good to know we got something there.
Personal size pumpkin.
Personal size. About the same size as Seminole. Looks like the outside's a little bumpier than Seminole.
Yep.
So all we got to do now is get them seeds out of there.
It looks like we're going to have a good seed crop for next year that I'm excited about.
Yeah, and if we get a good seed crop and we have a good response, a lot of people want these, we'll grow us a couple acres of them next year.
Yep.
And be good to go. Let's say hey to everybody first. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And we're really excited to have you with us tonight. We got a really good show planned. We're going to continue talking about specifically our market farming operation and how it works. But we got a lot of good things going on in our gardens. We got those Cherokee Tan pumpkins. Hope to kind of revamp that variety and get that variety back into selling it. The only person now that sells it is Danny and them on their Etsy store. But we were really excited to get that variety back.
We got a squash breeder up in Virginia, Edmund, that I'm going to contact him, and I may send him some of these seeds and see if he can't work them into his breeding program with that, the characteristics of this Cherokee Tan with this disease-resistant package. I'm wondering if he can work it in, cross it into those varieties, and carry that over. So I'm going to have a conversation with him and may send him some for his breeding program.
Right, because he does a combination between a butternut and Seminole, where you get the size of the butternut but all the disease package of the Seminole, and it might be interesting to cross that with the butternut.
Or Delicata or anything else that he's having trouble with.
Right, right.
One more. Blue Bayou. I had a great crop of these come along. Now, I've not eaten any yet, but this is cured out. Within next week, I'm probably going to bust me one open and eat it. Really good pumpkin. It's kind of similar. The only other pumpkin out there is called a Jerrydale.
Jerrydale, which is an heirloom.
But this is a hybrid variety that has also a really good disease package. I was impressed with the downy and powdery mildew resistance on these. We growed a little small. Heck, I didn't have a 20 by 30 plot, and I must have picked probably, I don't know, several, 30 or 40 pumpkins off that little big
good
spot.
Good size pumpkins.
And you can look there and you see it's a nice ornamental pumpkin. It's also supposed to be very good for eating. It has very sugar high content. They tell us, so we're going to make some dishes out of this in the next couple of weeks and see what happens.
Yeah, so in the past, if you wanted a blue pumpkin like this, you had to grow that Jerrydale heirloom, which is a good variety, but you're not going to get a whole lot of production, and you're also not going to get that disease package, whereas this baby right here has it all. And get you a nice little heirloom looking pumpkin with a productivity and the disease package.
Yep.
Them babies right there, come a few more months, if you was a market farmer, you could probably get $10-$15 for them right there.
Not on that, it's a great food source. These things store really well. I mean, you can put them underneath your barn, then you got something to eat way into the winter.
That's right. A couple things I want to mention. I want to give an update on my cats. So we had two cats. We rescued Chloe and Pumpkin, brother and sister. Pumpkin was a boy, Chloe was a girl. And last time we was on the show, I did mention that I had thought they had both R-U-N-N-O-F-T.
Run off.
But come to find out, only one of them run off. And somebody, before we got them, or right after we got them, a friend of mine works at a vet, she said, you're probably going to lose one of them. One of them's probably going to run off. Well, Pumpkin, I ain't seen Pumpkin. I seen her one morning early, way down the road. I think she's doing her own, doing his own thing. He's doing, but Chloe has settled in. She's there. I've caught her hunting rats at night. She'd be posted up on the compost bin.
Earning her keep.
I haven't seen any more field rats, hardly. Hadn't had any more holes in my drip tape. Now, the one thing I got to worry about is my wife and my youngins are petting on her, and I'm worried they're going to ruin her.
Yeah. We have to have a talk with them about messing with barn cat.
Yeah, yeah.
Barn cat's barn cat. It ain't a pet, it's a barn cat.
But anyway, she's been doing good work, so it's good, yep. Good that she stuck around. What else we got going on? Something I want to show you, we just added on the site. It's a new fertilizer we got here called ammonium sulfate. And this is going to come in handy for you guys that like to grow onions, shallots, which we'll have some, garlic, elephant garlic, and the leeks. This is a perfect fertilizer for your alliums.
Yeah, we've had troubles in the past getting the fertilizer and sulfur combination you need to grow these onions and leeks and things. And we was able to source this and we got it and we're excited about delivering that to the customer there. Gives you the option to put down exactly what you need to be successful growing these onions and things.
So you can side dress this, but it's also water soluble. You can inject it, yep, as well.
There's two different grades of this, and we got the grade that you could inject the fertilizer injector, so that's important.
So this is a 2100, so high nitrogen. It's also 24% sulfur, and this is going to help in that vegetative phase, or what I call the investment phase, going to help you get all them big leaves so when it comes to bulbing phase, that converts into a big old onion.
Now, just don't be careful if you go away from our site to buy this. As I mentioned just a while ago, there's different grades of this, and we got the one that's particularly made for side dressing or putting through the injector. You cannot put all ammonia sulfates through your injector, but you can't put this one through there.
So, good stuff here. Going to have this in these 10-pound bags and also available in a 30-pound option as well. Speaking of onions, I got a little tip. Very highly possible that we're going to have some Texas Legend onion seed.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not...
Inside information.
Yeah. I got a few connections. It's not a done deal yet, but it's very likely we're going to have. So we'll have four or five different onion seed varieties for those who want to grow their own onion starts. And we're going to do a little bit of both. We'll probably get some plants from Dixondale and grow some of our own and kind of maybe side by side it a little bit.
I got another tip.
Go ahead.
Tip I may have is we got some elephant garlic and some shallots sets maybe pretty soon.
Maybe pretty soon. Sound pretty confident there.
Mm-hmm, I do.
Elephant garlic can be hard to find, and but we're going to have it.
We're going to have it, and shallots, too.
One other thing I was going to mention. Oh, this struck me the other day. This is kind of diverting off the garden a little bit. I watch a lot of other YouTube channels out there just to kind of see what other people are doing gardening-wise and stuff, and... it doesn't happen as much on our channel, but I see it on a lot of these other channels. Some of these people that watch the YouTube videos and comment out there can be pretty rude and pretty harsh on some of these folks. And I don't think when these commenters, the ones who are rude and kind of mean, I don't think they realize when they comment on there how much effort it takes to produce these videos. When you watch a YouTube video, I know at least with ours, every video we post, you can go ahead and figure that there was probably about 4 or 5 hours put into it. So if you're that type of person that likes to give your opinion that can be harsh at times, I would just warn you, think about the effort that person put into it. And if you really strongly disagree with something, make your own video. Don't just hammer them on their video.
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing. If you disagree with the subject matter or the points of matter, you can make your point without being ugly. That's
right.
If you disagree with them, something I say, that's fine. We can hash that out. Just don't be rude about it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I get you.
Don't be rude. Don't be cursing on there.
Yeah. Talking ugly like your mama. Your mama wants you to talk that way.
That's right. That's right. All right. So, getting into the main topic this week. Last week we talked, or 2 weeks ago, we talked about kind of general market farming stuff. This week, we want to talk specifically about the model that I use and why it works for us. And I'm not, unlike some of the other guys out there, I'm not going to tell you this is going to work for everybody out there. It works for us. There's a few specific reasons why it does. And kind of want to talk about that.
I got my opinion on it too, but I'm going to let you go ahead and then I'll I'll inject when you
okay. skip through. Before I get into describing it specifically, we talked about last week the CSA and the farmer's market. The reason I don't do a CSA is because personally I don't believe in taking people's money up front if I can't guarantee them something in the future. So I don't want to take a bunch of people's money or shares, and then if I for some reason have a terrible crop and can't give them anything, that's I wouldn't feel good. I wouldn't sleep good at night with that. So I don't do a CSA. We also don't do a farmer's market because there's just not one around here that's a well-developed kind of worth the time deal.
They are a few around that do it well, and especially the bigger towns and stuff. And heck, they offer ice creams and things like that, mm-hmm. and they draw a good crowd. It's hard to do a CSA with growing a farmer's market, growing what you grow. A lot of times you have to bring a lot of the other inputs in to make it work.
Right.
It's not a bad strategy, it's just a little different strategy.
Right. So what we do, and I'll let you hold that up there when I talk. So what we do is what I call the weekly bag model, okay? So we don't require any upfront money. We take bag orders from week to week and fulfill them that way. So this is what our customers get. This is $20. This is we give them this brown paper bag here, and it has five items in it. And we'll go through just an idea of what we're looking at with five items. So five items for $20, $4 an item.
You always stay with five items, pretty much.
Always five items. Now the customer, for the most part, doesn't get to pick these items. Some weeks, I may only have five things to put in the bag, so there's no variance. Now other weeks, I might have eight or nine things, but for the sake, it's so much quicker to pack it if I can go out there and just start putting stuff in the bag. If you got to custom do every bag, man, it slows you down big time. So we try not to customize it. Every now and then we'll have a customer says, we just don't eat onions, I won't put onions in there. We'll concede one or two things, but for the most part, it's whatever I put in there. As far as the quantities inside the bag, I look at it this way. I try to do for each item enough for a family of four to have a side dish for supper. So let's take a look at what's in this week's bag. So the first thing we got some cucumbers here. So we got four nice slicing cucumbers. We got some gold prize squash, which is kind of the last of it. Four nice gold prize squash. Let's see what else we got in here. Got some eggplant. So three of these nice striped eggplant here. And then we've got some two of our small wonder spaghetti squash. And then the last item we have here is one of our kabocha squash that we grew. So there's your five items there that you would get in a bag. And that could vary. You know, some people this week might have got okra and peppers.
So everybody don't get the same thing.
Everybody doesn't get the same thing, because that's the kind of the big trick to it. I don't always have 20 bags. Say we sell 20 bags a week. Mm-hmm. I don't always have 20 bags of okra or 20 bags of pepper. So that's why we may have more than five things available, and that's why we can't do the custom orders.
Okay.
And our customers understand that, and they kind of like the variety.
Now, why would a customer want to buy your bag instead of going to the grocery store? What added value do you offer there with this that they can't get at the grocery store?
Well, there's a couple things. There's some things in there you're just not going to be able to get at the grocery store. Those smaller spaghetti squash, some of the peppers I grow, the kabocha squash are hard to find. The other thing is the taste, especially when it comes to the greens. My collards, my kale are going to taste better than what somebody can get at the grocery store, just because I'm not pumping them full of nitrates.
So a couple other things that may be a reason to buy this is locally grown.
Locally grown. Mm-hmm.
Also, you don't use any of the metoclopramides or anything like that. So
right.
You're not organic, but it's naturally grown. Pretty much to say.
Right, right.
You don't use any of the powerful pesticides.
Right,
they have
right. Anything that is ever sprayed can be, the things can be eaten that day or the next day.
Right. So the person can actually feel better about buying from you eating healthier than they could from a grocery store.
Right, right.
Plus locally grown.
But my marketing strategy is not to compare myself to the grocery store. That's really not
what I'm going for. No, but I'm just thinking, why would you? I'm thinking to myself, why would I buy this bag instead of going to the grocery store?
I got you.
So, now, a couple of things that you could do a little bit better.
Okay.
To increase on this is you could brand this bag.
Well, we do have a sticker. I didn't put one on this one. We have a sticker we put on this bag that says Lazy Dog Farms, local, fresh. So we do brand the bags.
Brand the bags and also recipe cards in the bag.
The recipe, that is something we...
A branded recipe card in the bag would be good.
Yeah, that's something we're looking at doing because some of the items like the kombucha squash, some of the things are unfamiliar to some people and they might not know how to prepare it. So we thought about doing that. Mm-hmm. Just to mention, we not only put veggies in there, we do put fruits in there. Early in the spring, I have mulberries I'll put in there, blackberries, figs. We've put a lot of figs in bags a month or so ago, and muscadines are getting ready. We'll be putting muscadines in there. So I have several fruit options on my homestead that it really helps supplement to be able to fill the bags. Just a little bit about the marketing of it. Like I said, we don't require any commitment from 1 week to the next. We do all of our marketing and take all of our orders on Facebook. And we do send out a little email. So
that's where I was going to point to this. This particular model here is highly dependent upon social media.
Right.
You really couldn't pull it off before the advent of some of the social media that we have right there today. You know, we all complain.
You could, but it would be a lot of legwork.
It'd be hard. We all complain about Facebook and everything, but it forced the opportunity to be able to do these type things through social media. So you don't do any advertising. I mean, the social media drives all your sales.
Right, right.
And you can create a group. There's several different things you can do. You can create a group and foster that group along and post in that group.
Or a business page.
Also, these worlds of things you can do with Facebook advertising. You can advertise to that group or you can advertise to just different areas.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what we do is usually on Saturday or Sunday, I'll tell my wife, these are the items that we have.
She's the social media.
Right. She's our marketing person.
Okay.
Even though I'm the marketing person here, I let her have those marketing duties.
Everybody's got their place.
Right. So she does a post and she says, these are the items we've got this week. And she puts it on Facebook. She sends out a little email and people just write sold or they'll text her, whatever. And then
how do you accept payment?
We accept payment through PayPal, Venmo, or cash and check on delivery. So wide range of ways.
But wouldn't it be better if you got prepaid when somebody said they wanted it then to get paid right then?
We do with some people do that. It just varies.
Yeah. Some people may not have a PayPal account.
Right. Some of the younger people, they'll PayPal, Venmo. Some of the older people want to give you
Venmo is.
It's just like PayPal. Okay. You can just send money back and forth to one another. A couple reasons why this works for us and may not work for everybody. My wife, the growing part of it, it takes some effort, but the hardest part of this is the marketing part and actually being able to sell the bags or sell the idea. My wife is very plugged into the community. She knows lots and lots of people, very involved. And so that is one of the main reasons why it works.
And she also has a job that carries her to three different towns within the week where she can do delivery.
Right. So she works, she's a staff attorney for the local Superior Court judges. So she works at the courthouse in both the towns she works in. So her office is centrally located and that's where the bag pickup is done. If you did this model and had to, we have some weeks, depending on if she was out of town, we have had to do Saturday deliveries. It takes a lot more time if you're delivering. It works really good if you've got a centralized pickup location and you can get everybody on board to come pick it up.
That's one of the drawbacks to this is that the pickup and everything. You got to figure that out.
Yeah.
I personally think if I was going to start doing it, I would work with my local hospital and have
a drop-off.
That'd be a great drop-off there if you could work with them because you're promoting healthy eating. You're promoting something there. In
or gym, weeks. Maybe.
Yeah, or anything like that. I think that would be a good...
So, I grow the veggies. It works. That works good, but it wouldn't work without that other aspect of it, having her plugged in doing the marketing. Because most if not, I would say all of our customers are women. They're way more likely to buy from her than they are than me. Most of them, a lot of them are repeat customers, so her being able to establish that relationship with them really helps.
So tell us some of the most popular items that you would put in that bag.
Okay, so
the ones that are most requested, I guess.
Yeah, and this is interesting because what may be my most popular items versus look at what Curtis and JM say are their most popular varies greatly. So let's talk about the low demand things. So things that they get a lot of money for, the mixed greens and radishes and things like that, I don't have a whole lot of demand for. That's not to say I won't grow them and have them as an item in the bag, but it's not a hot item for me.
What about lettuce?
Lettuce is pretty good. I've gotten pretty decent at growing lettuce, and people really like our lettuce. You can't find the type of lettuce we grow some of the butterheads in our local stores. If you do, it's $5 or $6 a head. Other things that are real high demand, corn, sweet corn, obviously, okra, everybody loves okra. One of the things that surprises me that's so high demand, because you can find it just about anywhere, is broccoli. People love our broccoli. Cauliflower is really high demand. Brussels sprouts are really high demand. So we try to provide those things. One of the things with growing stuff like corn and broccoli, and I understand why the big market farmers don't do it. It takes up a lot of room, and it's a one-time harvest, and it takes a lot of inputs to grow it. But if you've got that demand for it, it's one of those things. If you've got that item, that might be the deal breaker whether somebody wants to buy a bag that week or not buy a bag. So you got to have that kind of stuff.
And it's nearly impossible to go to town to buy non-GMO organic sweet corn.
Right, right. As far as if there's any seasonality to this, we do it basically year round. Now, I will say in the months of September and October, everything really slows down. Now we are busy in October. I'm busy planting stuff then and in September, but because there's not a whole lot of production in August or things I can plant in August, there's not a whole lot of things I can put in bags in September and October. So we might only do, five or 10 bags a week in those months.
These are one bag. You get how many times can I get a bag a week?
Once.
Well, I get once a week, and you deliver on Saturday morning, Friday to Saturday.
No, we do pickups on Monday and Tuesday.
Okay. Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, that's when the pickups are. So I harvest on Saturday and Sunday, and most of the stuff I harvest, can keep for a good little while. I talked about the repeat harvest versus the one-time harvest crops. When you're doing this, you really need to have a lot of repeat harvest crops out there. Those are going to be your steady things because you only have to plant them once. Okra, peppers, eggplant, tomatoes surprisingly aren't a very high demand item for us. Wow. People like them, but it's not somebody's like, man, when are your tomatoes going to be ready? So we don't put a lot of tomatoes in bags. We eat them all ourselves, most part. It's nice to have crops that store well. So we want to grow things that store well.
Pumpkins,
sweet potatoes, onions.
Winter squash.
Those things that you can just have on a rack out there and don't have to go harvest them and process them every week. It takes a lot longer to get the bags ready in the fall and winter months when I'm doing lettuce, greens, and stuff, because the lettuce, you have to cut it and bag it every week. You can't just grab it off a shelf like you can the sweet potatoes or the potatoes. And then the last thing is we try to keep washing at a minimum. I do wash carrots. I do rinse off my squash and cucumbers a little bit, but that's about it. I don't wash the lettuce. I don't wash the greens. And I tell all my customers that there's a good reason we do that. It keeps a lot better if you wash it right before you eat it. So I'm sure there's a lot of other questions, and we could probably do a whole YouTube series on this. If you have any more questions about this model and how it works, let us know in the comments. And if we need to do another few shows on it down the road, we'll certainly do that.
It's interesting to me.
Just before we jump into questions, I should have mentioned this earlier. So when we started this thing, I started it as an experiment. We we used to go to a lot of trade shows and see a lot of other models out there. But those were well done in bigger towns, more affluent areas. And we grow a lot of food because we need to for the content, for the channel. And I just wanted to see, as an experiment, would this work in a very rural, more poor area that we live in?
It is poor here. We're examples of that.
Yeah. And so it started out as just an experiment, and it's been going about 3 years now, and it's really churning good. So, give it a try. Start small, and you never know where it may go for you.
Let's jump into some questions.
Let's do. If we do answer your question on the show, send us an email to cusserve@hosstools.com, and we'll send you a nice little prize. First question here we got from Heart Love Farms, and they said, I do have a question about cut flowers. Since the few videos y'all have done on cut flowers, it has sparked my interest in adding cut flowers to my market garden and selling them at the market. The question is, what do you recommend to use as a preservative for cut flowers to make them last longer after harvesting? Either a homemade solution or store-bought, something I want to pass along to my customers.
Well, what I did when I got this question, I said, I may have to reach out to an expert. So I texted my friend, Lisa Ziegler, with this question, because Lisa is the cut flower expert. She has done forgot more about cut flowers than I'll ever know.
Right.
Now, we love to grow cut flowers for our own production. And you've talked about adding them to your bag, but you have not.
Right.
So we just grow them for our own enjoyment. I love giving away, but I don't know a whole lot about cut flower marketing. So I asked this question to Lisa because I knew Lisa would know, and I'm going to tell you what she texted me back.
Okay.
Problem with homemade, doesn't hold up more than 12 hours. You have to change it out daily.
Okay.
Pro stuff lasts and does a great job. She means professional stuff. Provides nutrients to keep the green and bud openings. Has a biocide to prevent funk and a pH balancer to help prevent air bubbles that clog stems.
Funk, you mean fungus.
She said funk, so I'm assuming that. So she recommends a tablet called CVBM. She actually sells this on her site, which is thegardenersworkshop.com.
CVBM?
CVBM tablets. And you put one of these to a gallon of water, I think is the instructions on there, and it provides all of this.
Is that the same thing they send you if you order flowers online?
I don't know. But there's one particular flower, maybe begonias or something that you have to be careful with. So these instructions on the website showing how to use this stuff, and this is evident. It's not that expensive. I think for 300 tablets is $18 or something like that. Excuse me, 80 tablets for $18. It's not that bad. But from Lisa's standpoint, this is the way to go. And I may buy some just, to use around here at the house. So I hope that answers your question.
About a quarter of a tablet, like that. All right. Good stuff. What else do we got?
So Charlotte Smart wants to know, this is my first year planting a garden. Congratulations, Charlotte. I live in Louisiana. What do I need to plant my fall garden and when do I start?
Interesting question, because we was just talking about this the other day. And one of the things that's kind of neat to me that I'm seeing as we're seeing all these seed orders for fall stuff come in the spring, we're ahead of a lot of people, but in the fall, we're behind of a lot of people. So a lot of people are getting ready to plant some stuff. We still got to wait a little while. But in August, I would say no matter where you are, there's a few things you need to go ahead and get started transplant wise. And these are four things that are easy, relatively easy to grow that I'd recommend for a beginner gardener or an experienced gardener. First one of those being some tiger collards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They can handle the heat. They can also handle the cold way on in the winter. So you're not going to plant those too early. The second one being some lacinato kale. Another thing, they can handle the heat. Handle the cold.
So heirloom varieties absolutely got one of the best tastes as far as kale that I know of.
Yeah, and repeat harvest.
Yeah, good stuff.
The third one, which we don't have on the site yet, but are soon, is a variety of cabbage called Cheers Cabbage. It's the standard hybrid, really productive cabbage out there. And highly recommend growing that in the fall.
Cheers?
Cheers Cabbage.
Regular round cabbage.
Yeah. And then the last one is Green Magic broccoli. So Green Magic is what all the commercial guys around here grow, but we've been growing it for years. It's the most heat tolerant variety of broccoli out there.
We've grown it and had it come off in October.
Been
successful.
You can plant that now and you'll be good to go. So I would focus at least on those four. Lots of other options out there, but if you just want something to get started with that you can start those seeds now, go with those four.
Huge dividends dependent on those four varieties there.
Before we sign off, I figured we'd do a little taste test. Mm-hmm. So these is our Brazilian orchid peppers. And I haven't tried one yet, so I don't know. I don't know if you got nine.
Is it hot?
Well, we're going to see. I don't know. I haven't tried them yet. So I'm going to just cut one of these little lobes off the side here. So there ain't no seeds in that. And you try that, and I'm going to try this side here. And get you a good
bite. That tastes like kind of like a bell pepper.
Get you a good bite.
Well, I did. It's sweet. That's a sweet pepper. Mm-hmm. It's got a good flavor to it. Those would make pretty decent stuffing peppers.
Mm-hmm. They're good. Mm-hmm. They're good. Nice kind of citrusy flavor to them.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
They start out green, but they ripen to an orange or red.
Yeah, those are good. You had me worried there, but that's a nice pepper.
Yeah. All right. So, good show tonight. Let us know if you have any questions.
Get off the couch and do something, folks. You can't sit there and watch cartoons all day long. You got to get out there, make something happen.
That's right. Get them gardens ready for fall. Get your seeds. Get everything going.
See you later.
Bye-bye.